again on the SDT problem. The contract provides that SDT will be reimbursed 100% of their personnel costs plus a 101% total administrative fee. It's a very expensive proposition to the university. The university, in addition, pays for the computer, pays for the space for the computing center, and the relationship is extreme between SDT and the university. So I recommend it to the board. The board adopted after having no standards enough as a consultant that the first thing we do is renegotiate the present contract, which has until June 30th, 1981 to run. And we just put it in simple language as to what the responsibilities and obligations of the party to the contract are to be. And then, having gone through that process, then that by September 1978, a decision is reached as to whether or not, at the end of the contract period, the university wishes to renew the contract or to assume its own obligation for it to do. That decision really must be made by September 78. If it decides to continue with SDT, then it has sufficient time to negotiate a new contract. If it decides not to continue, then it would have to double budget for a year in order to get people on board and get its own center operating while the SDT people were phasing out. My observation is the local SDT people think that they're competent and hardworking people. But the interface is difficult and it's expensive.
Difficult in what way? In terms of management responsibility?
Yes, clearly defining who has the, both the responsibility and the authority for the computing center. What is the, there are the normal conflicts between research and faculty needs and administrative needs. I think the computing center needs a good advisory board so that it is sure that it will meet faculty needs. We talked a lot this morning about all of the financial and administrative problems at the university, and they are so overwhelming that that becomes a part of the conversation. But again, a point of frustration is that this is a university. With all of that, what that implies, and with a strong or large community college component, and we were unable to spend the amount of time in the academic part of this institution that it deserves. It's unfortunate that the housekeeping problems of this institution so overwhelmed the true purpose of the institution.
That's somewhat like Pan Am, where there's less of an airline than a financial borrowing agency to consider it.
Yeah.
You mentioned a community college as well. Maybe this brings up the structure of the university. I know you mentioned the problem dealing with such a diverse university, which is, I think, also complicated by financial problems and political problems. What's your understanding of or perception of the problem of the community colleges interfacing with a four-year institution? And where do you see it going? I guess one of my concerns has been that while CDCC here has developed somewhat as an outgrowth of what is already on campus and needs that the anchor situation is such that the four-year college is coming in on top of a very popular and widespread widely supported community college.
The situation is totally different between Fairbanks and Anchorage. I think that so you have the university already established, and then you have a community college added to it in the same community as a part of the same administration that it said will work and is working relatively well here. In Anchorage, community college was there first, became established. And when we then superimpose the
senior college concept on top of that, then change the direction and say, well, instead of a senior college, it's an upper division and graduate institution, we will have a comprehensive university. To do that, and that's a logical thing in Anchorage to occur, but you have to also, at the same time, have the community college remodel its course offerings and get out of university parallel work as its emphasis and go and make its emphasis in vocational technical course programs. That's what the whole fight is in Anchorage at the present time, is for UAA to establish itself as a comprehensive university in a normal offering and lower division work, and for ACC to change its emphasis to vocational technical. And until that gets resolved, the battle will continue down. Complicated by the fact that one institution is unionized and the other one isn't.
Would it be correct to assume that the union sees this perhaps not as a union busting divide, but in fact having that effect?
Yes, they do. And so much of their activity protects the jobs of women. And so an educational objective is valid, crosswise with a union objective that for its members is also valid.
You mentioned, I think, in one of your remarks that, and I think in a interview you had with Juanita Tucker in October, the difficulty of having so many university institutions in so many places throughout the state. Would you see this as a time for the university to begin reviewing its commitments and perhaps defining them or trying to centralize them?
If it does do this, quickly within the next year, with full faculty involvement, it's going to be superimposed from the outside. There's the number of research institutions that have been assisted to have the problem, the number of campuses and the FTEs that campus can produce the problem. The faculty has got to take a hold of this problem, look at it as objectively as possible, and with administrative involvement, come to some conclusions, make recommendations to the Board of Regents for their consideration. One of the problems here is the faculty is not strong enough as a faculty. They've been too divided. Fighting breath fire wars on different things. If this university is to be improved, saved, if you will, it's really going to be the faculty that will do it. There, as I mentioned before, there's an overdependence on the presidency. The president is one person. You can give leadership, but my view is that the faculty objective also provides leadership and understanding. And there is too much money now being spent to accomplish the work that is there to be done because of the way it's organized. It's a team and unit. This is not critical of existing faculty leadership. I think they see the problem. But the whole faculty has got to get together and assert themselves.
I think that's perhaps a different point of view than the faculty has had for a number of years in terms of responsibility, or perhaps they've seen themselves primarily as differing with the office of the president.
I think they have. You know, I think that shared governance here has not worked. And it did. The presidency should be strong, but it needs a shared governance concept. And universities are intended to be run by their faculty. And the president then is a spokesman for that faculty and is guided by it. He makes recommendations to the faculty. He gets guidance from the faculty. He transmits and is the interface between the faculty and the board of regents. But the president is not with the faculty. It's not going to work. For instance, one of the things that stopped me there was the fact that the tenure was granted by the president without reviewed by the board of regents. I disagree with the fact that if the president can grant the tenure, he can refuse to grant the tenure. His role ought to be one of recommending to the board for the final decision by the corporate authority, the board of regents, having been guided by the peers of the faculty member involved. I was recommending a change in that. Fortunately, in my opinion, faculty looking at the same problem were right on the same track. We're moving there. I think that's a very important thing to be thought about. The president has the authority here to dismiss people without board meetings. This is not right. I'm not out to weaken the competency, but to make it strong in the right way.
Mm-hmm. I think perhaps your concept or understanding of the president as the chief executive officer, CEO of the board, differs, I guess, quite a bit from other individuals who have previously occupied the office.
That's the perception of it.
I was just wondering, that was your perception too, that I saw that in the interview and what I've read and talking with you, that you understand the president in his function, and others perhaps have seen themselves appointed by the board, but negotiating with the board in perhaps a different way than a chief executive officer would relate to the board.
Yes, I agree that from what I understand of my predecessors, my views are very.
How would you characterize the relationship you had with the regents? In terms of one, their knowledge of the real problems of the university, their understanding, perhaps financial or educational sophistication, and
the regents are, of course, with one exception, are all relatively new to the board. If there's any problem that the board has, and that same point is the fact that many of them are still learning how to be a regent. But I would characterize this board as an above average board of regents. I think the dedication is good. They're certainly willing to spend the time to try and do the job. They've been burdened as a board by administrative turmoil, now continues, unfortunately. I have no disappointment in the board. Mm-hmm. I think that they've been supportive of me, and I have nothing real to say about them as a board.
Just briefly characterize the relationship with the legislature. Did you have a relationship with either a particular or groups of legislators, either in Fairbanks or Anchorage, that either assisted you or proved detrimental to what you attempted to do for the university?
I have established a relationship with two people that I found supportive and helpful. However, the people didn't have as much support with other legislators. His idea is desirable. I think he's on the right track as a legislator about many things. Senator Petula was extremely supportive, wants the right thing to happen here. They spend the time necessary to understand the university. The major disappointment I had as far as legislative relationship came through the Geophysical Institute, now famous this understanding about how legislative relationships can work, where the judiciary can speak with the conduct its own legislative relationship, I accepted to that. I then interpreted that as cutting them off entirely from legislators, and legislators interpreted that as cutting them off, in my opinion, and cutting them off from that constituent. So my feat in that effort was rather foolish once legislators from Fairbanks objected to my attempt to coordinate legislative relationships. That problem is not related, that is not restricted to Fairbanks. Same thing is going on, as you know, other parts of the system. Legislators have reached into a part of the university and they become advocates or critics of a part. And they attach the same significance then to an isolated piece of information and prejudice from within the university that they do to avoid adopted policy. Hopefully, the university can get a handle on this problem someday because, again, success will be dependent.
Do you find that the Alaskans, whether it's the university or whatever, are almost inordinately political and involved in the political process in terms of, I know it's characteristic of small states, but if perhaps someone has not resolved the problem at the departmental level or at the campus level, it will often go either to the president or around the president of the board or around the president of the board to a member of the House or Senate.
Yes, I agree. Just in the way the process is being attempted, I would say it's working, attempted. And it is a highly politicized state from the ground up. I'd also like to comment that no record of this kind could be satisfactory to me without commenting on this. We like, as a family, and as an individual, like Alaska, we found ourselves going at the home here in Utica. People were gracious and kind to us. We were well received, and I appreciated that. And it was extremely helpful, whatever success I had with the person here, because of that openness on the part of me. However, Alaskans are politicized in the way they attempt to do business. And so I find myself with even a man that I respect as much as Juan Rodriguez, finding that when he believes himself unsuccessful within the university, he immediately going to the legislature to solve the problem. And I think that's in that kind of way.
How does that compare to the situation in Nevada, in terms of contrast? You're kind of moving, just not part of what goes on, or is it much lower key, or?
Back in 1967, 68, about that time, Nevada went through this kind of a situation where the university system, a legislature and university recognized at the same time that wasn't going to work. Between the legislature and the university, that they would work with the Board of Regents, the board, the corporate authority, the spokesman for the university. And so that's the way it works there. It does not close off faculty from the university. Faculty associations and unions in Nevada are active and are represented. The legislature with their point of view, but it is not representative of an administrative part of the university. And here the difference is that each institute campus to engage the event. Make their own presentation of that. I think the Nevada system is an open one and more coordinated in a way that works. But it didn't always work.
What your general perceptions of, I guess we've talked about a lot of the perceptions of the university administrator, that where it needs to go now in terms of the, as an institution, and it's a major problem, I think.
The passes and priorities that it can see the housekeeping activities that they're in order, the books can be balanced and people can be assured that the trustees of the university are doing their function. But it's not critical to them, people won't open the review by the faculty and the university of the way it's organized and the true goals and what we can do. And I think that that's a very important aspect. Again, I think this is going to come more from the faculty than it will any day else. If it does not, then it's going to be done by the legislature. And the problem is that it is. Legislators, even if they were all at the rhythm, individual at the rhythm of Solomon, they are not the individual. They are the legislature. And it must come from the faculty.
We do see as one of the aspects of the planning process the resolution to at least some degree of the animosity between entities and turbines. Falling out of programs or roles for the university.
I don't see that much animosity between entities and turbines. Other people do, and maybe I'm missing the point. But I see University of Alaska turbines potentially statewide mission. And with a scope of programs that is basically appropriate to that mission. University of Alaska Anchorage, on the other hand, has a regional situation that I think they're willing to work on and be content with, but it's the appropriate one. I think they're not desirous of replacing UAS. I don't. Some of the rhetoric that has occurred has been just that. It's been an administrator trying to establish his turf for his own private reasons. And I think that is an end.
One of the aspects I think that impressed many people was the, I think, relatively wealthy way you came into the university, the way you've worked. Maybe you'd like to discuss that, because I think perhaps many people have seen not only an imperial U.S. presidency, but a somewhat imperial U.K. presidency in terms of privileges and presidential prerogatives.
I think it's an ethical problem to a certain extent, and one of what one individual has to do is appropriate for the better others to be appropriate. I think a president who is not king, he's not the United States president, or he's a governor, or he is the chief executive officer of an institution, and he should be adequately compensated. But that compensation should be related to how the faculty are compensated. There shouldn't be a wide division. A faculty member performing a different kind of a job. And I think the way the president handles himself, the way his salary and purchases are set the tone for the institution. And I think he does. University provides a very lovely home that they make an investment much easier and is a very important thing benefit. But to provide a full-time maid service and a biggest sense of now, cars, all of this seems to me to be superfluous, and also to interfere with, my relationship with the faculty and the community. I found here that human accounts were out of hand, that they were uncontrolled, and that there would be dozens of people that seemed to have the right to charge in a human account. Adopted the concept of representational allowances to define what they could be used for, how much we had them hold back on, to send them to borders, and not to be, for the most part, relieved. To give them some guidance and many times I was heard by the people that I was maybe not meeting my obligation for a human being. Large groups of people that I view that as the president of the human being on behalf of the university. Just to accomplish a purpose of improving his working relationship with especially with legislators, donors, or potential donors, with the ability to establish their working relationship with the university. And again, that is why I mentioned that I got the relationship between small groups with one to one. I can't do it with having 100 people to a party.
How would you characterize your strengths as an academic administrator and perhaps weaknesses or areas of skill in the field of content now?
I think my strength as an academic administrator is the fact that I recognize my weaknesses as an academic administrator. I believe that many people who came up as teaching faculty in a specific discipline believe that those concepts in that discipline are applicable throughout the university and attempt to impose them. I taught, but only as secondary activity, and all of my teaching has been while I was also an administrator. Very interested in the problems of university and community college curriculum. A major part of my doctoral work is in community college curriculum. I think that the whole area is one that justifies a lot more attention than it receives. But again, by the faculty, that each discipline must find its own rate of validation and be coordinated by academic administrators. I obviously have a lot of experience in financial administration and budgeting and identified strengths, but these must be understood to be tools to accomplish the objectives of the institution. And I don't mean undo themselves. They're just ways of accomplishing the objective and not the objective. We don't have an institution that we can budget for.
Do you see any problem? I know one of the things that I believe you did in Reno or in Nevada was to separate statewide administration from the local campus to perhaps give an identity to vote. Is this something you would see occurring here? Or, you know, if perhaps what's the relationship to the present campus?
Present campus covers personalities. And I hope that relationship is going very well. I didn't feel that I was in his way. I don't think that he felt that I was in his way either. I think, however, that is a matter that you couldn't trust two people's personalities, and that rather quickly there could be a decision about this, and the central administration it be somewhere else. There is an information that many people who wish to resolve a problem to be resolved in the country. There's a decision of the right administration of the quote survey. So the statewide administration on the part of people in our state or whatever. And I think that some other arrangements would be more satisfactory.
You guys should contact me on Facebook. that seems to be a difficult problem. It seems like, I guess, administratively,
we resolved that in Nevada very quickly. University of Nevada, Las Vegas, people were concerned about statewide administration being on the email campus being too closely tied to it. So it's very urgent to move statewide administration downtown email into temporary quarters and eventually built a small administration there. Statewide administration in Nevada is 20 people. Many responsibilities are assigned to the four divisions. So statewide administration is smaller there.
Do you see any, in the way the university is budgeted now, do you see that there are any constraints to growth in terms of, say, administration or efficiency because they're effectively not paying for space, so there's no constraints other than their ability to design their funds, but the discipline or their development.
One of the things that I was thought of making a concern to research institutes is the fact that I wanted them to retain 100% of their indirect costs and then pay their actual cost of operation to the parent company. That they should be charged for their paid or administrative services provided. What was happening was a sort of an artificial separation of the indirect costs received, part to assembly administration, part to DAS, part held by the institute. And as the institute received 100% of their indirect costs and then paid for their service.
He has sometimes worked for the library. And I know he's doing any library advisors. And if you have any thoughts in terms of the library's role and people's library's role in the education process.
Again, in the university of Texas Community College, the library is central to the university. A university without a strong library is not feasible. I believe that librarians are faculty members as professionals at the court of professional opportunities and responsibilities of other faculty members. Sometimes it's considered the library is a bottomless pit for public services to agree to the rapidly escalating process of books and periodicals that it's attention to pay a lot of attention to the library, make sure that the people there are with it, meeting with demand. My initial observation here is that this library and its staff strive mightily to do the job. I think that there is not always understanding of how important that is, even in any faculty.
I know sometimes over the years we've had difficulties in terms of relating to people teaching in a classroom, that librarians are faculty, and that there is a real need for academic freedom, or to ensure academic freedom in the library. That's why some of them aren't sensitive. In our politicized state, we often have had, not often, but we have occasionally had either laymen or state officials visit the library with the idea of seeing what's available and making sure that their particular bias is well represented.
Yes, I'm aware of that kind of problem, and I'm sure against this, but I'm sure that the professional staff and library are faculty members that they are afforded tenure, they are tenure faculty of the program for that kind of student. And that they accept their responsibility.
There are other things that you'd like to talk about. I think we've gone through pretty much. Maybe it would be good if you could just recap the sequence of your personally arriving at the designation decision, not only in terms of what occurred, but by your own reaction to it, and also, hey, this is where my ability to interact with this kind of research comes in.
Again, simply stated, when I realized that the trauma was not behind me, I remember it was just entering the main stage of it, as I see it, it was a deficit and other unresolved management problems. And I realized how politicized the issue was. And the fact that the legislature was acting, what basically I did, except the legislature to act, but not in a way that was going to allow me to resolve itself. I believe that I just did not wish to be fully responsible for what it was doing. It would be professionally done, but it would be contrary to my best interest as an individual. I also believe that by beating myself out of this mess that I was seen to do, that I think I was made it more comfortable. Having identified what I believe are all the problems, I'm afraid I'm more there. That the next president might have a better opportunity to resolve this problem. I sincerely hope that.